pleasure to be here. Thank you for your invitation to have a meaningful exchange on something about, which is embodiment. We have quite a bit of time with one another, and what I'd like to do is dedicate 10 minutes of that time for our attendees, and including ourselves, Matthew, Soma, and Dana. If you can take your mind off the technicalities for a minute. And what I'd like to do is take us to a space where we can have a deeper, more meaningful exchange. So I'm going to take us through about a 10 minute, maybe a little bit less, guided meditation. And then we can start the conversation, which I'll be having with my colleague and good friend, Soma Miller. So what I'd like to do is ask everyone who is in attendance to first and foremost, make sure they're seated in a comfortable position. Let yourself be comfortable, but not collapsed in any way. So your spine is erect, but it is not stiff. And I'm going to take us on a little bit of a journey and drop us in just a little bit deeper, and then we'll have our conversation. Does that sound good? I'll take that, since I can't see any of you, I'll take that as a yes, and I hope you participate. I'm gonna go ahead and share the sound here so we can bring some sound elements to our experience. So what I'd like you to do is go ahead and close your eyes. Let your spine be straight but not stiff. And go ahead and bring your attention inward. And let your breath start to get a little bit deeper. Breathe in through your nostrils, fill up your abdomen, allow it to expand, and then release the air. You're gonna hear some music come in, and then just surrender to the experience and the process of this guided meditation. You should be hearing some music pumping through. And what I'd like you to do is envision yourself in the middle of the ocean. The somewhat rough ocean. And all the activity on the ocean is everything that is undone or unfinished or unknown in your life. Chaos or conflict, unresolved issues, unprocessed pains and emotions, all expressing themselves through waves and splashes of water. And as a deep sea diver, I'm going to give you a superhuman power. I'm going to allow you to let yourself go from treading water in the middle of this massive ocean and to start to drop underneath the water. And as you let go and release and fall underneath the surface of the water, looking up, you can see the beautiful sky. No need to change anything. And with every exhale, fall a little bit deeper. You can look up at the surface, back to the ocean floor, dropping deeper with every exhale. Feeling the pressures of the water, somewhat comforting, somewhat heavy. And you can feel yourself now falling deeper as your space starts to get darker and darker. Continue dropping. And I want you to start to surrender now to the quiet. Knowing that it's safe to let go of your vigilance. Everything will be there when you return. And on the next exhale, I want you to take away the chaos from your body. Dropping deeper and deeper into the dark, black sea. On your next exhale, deeper. Now I want you to release whatever does not serve you. What no longer serves you, let it leave and bubble up to the surface. Feel your body now land gently on the ocean floor. Breath is moving, connected and deep. As you land gently on the ocean floor, I want you to start feeling the ocean currents swaying you like seaweed from left to right. Surrender to that. Release your spine. Get heavy in your seat. And connect to the natural movements of the currents moving your body. And trust what feels good to you right now in your body as you allow yourself to gently sway back and forth. You're either allowing this moment or blocking it. I'm asking you to allow it. Even if you need to fake it a little bit, allow it to be so. What you're doing is merging with all that is. You're tuning into her, the great her. Finding her rhythm. If this feels out of reach, let the breath travel below the chest and into your belly. Let the belly go and let the muscles around your heart soften. Allow your spine to move with the currents. And on your next inhale, without any force, just breathe a little deeper. If you need to clear the pathway of your breath so more breath can enter, do so. Allow what's moving you and holding you and one with you to love you and breathe you in this space. If your mind is busy, then track your sensations. If pleasure is surging, then soften into the pleasure. If tightness is there, no judgment, just feel it as sensation. The nature of the feminine Shakti is immersion. Same way the scuba diver becomes one with the ocean. There's nothing to figure out here. It is in this space that wisdom comes, that anything worthwhile can be shared and exchanged. And I want you to unclench your heart now. as if you were to unclench a fist. This feeling of connectivity to her is always available to you. And if you can't find her, ask her from this space to find you. If you have an intention for this conference, drop it here. If you have unresolved issues, drop the questions here. This is fertile ground. This is the way home. This is the bridge between heaven and earth. And slowly, we're going to let go of this meditation and allow ourselves to naturally rise up in the water. And as you make your way up through the water and you come out to the surface, you can come back to the call. And I'd like to have a conversation starting at this space and at this point. I'd like to introduce my friend Soma Miller, who's going to be facilitating the questions. And I'll be answering them. At some point, we will take questions from the audience surrounding the topics of masculine archetypes, or really whatever you want to talk about. I'll be happy to talk to you about that. Soma, my brother, thank you so much for coming on and spending some time with me.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation. It's good to be here with you. Thank you for that meditation too. That was powerful. That really dropped me in. I want to jump right into questions. So we have time for my own questions I wanted to bring to you, as well as people in the audience chiming in. As a men's work facilitator, personally, I'm really curious about your perspective on this, because this is something I'm always inquiring about through my own process of gaining more clarity. So I want to ask you, what do you see the biggest challenge that modern men are facing today?
Yeah, thank you. So the biggest challenge I see is that we don't have communities that foster the guidance of elders. We don't have any sort of an initiation process to bring men, bring boys into what it means to be a mature masculine. And there is an uphill battle that's being fought as young men are being brought up by porn culture, pop culture. And these principles that are revered are completely counter to what is needed. What is needed is a deep connection of men to themselves and to the elements. To Mother Nature herself. And we need elders and communities to take the responsibility of fostering that community and that wisdom that comes from that type of connection. I'm reminded of a story that the BBC wrote in late 2018. It was an incident that had happened in the mid-80s in South Africa at Pilansberg National Park, where 50 adolescent elephants were acting violent. It's not really known for elephants. They tussle, but not violent. These elephants were mutilated, destroying rhinos on this park. And what was happening is elephants in adolescence move into a stage of must, which is where they're flooded with hormones. And they swagger, they stand tall. It's just their way of saying, here I am, I want to mate. And it's an absolute normal process, but somehow there was a disconnect and these elephants were acting incredibly violent. So an ecologist by the name of Gus Van Dyke does a little research, and he doesn't have to dig too far, where he finds out that in the late 70s, when these elephants were brought from other locations to this national park, the person in charge of bringing these elephants over only brought the children and the mothers. They didn't bring any of the bigger bull elephants, probably to save money or whatever the reasoning was. And he went out and brought in some bull elephants, and the situation literally overnight shifted. Something happens when conscious men are in the vicinity or around adolescents or children. So these elephants, when in presence of a bull elephant, were able to self-regulate and work with that energy. So I think the biggest problem we have right now is that there are no elders, there's no community, there's no initiation rites to let these adolescents know, yes, this power running through you is natural and healthy and vibrant, and a lot of good can come from it. But you need to be able to work with it, and it can't turn into a self-serving, it's all about me endeavor, which our society absolutely supports. So we're left with boys running the country, not men that are connected to, I call her the great mother or mother nature or the elements. We're disconnected. We're disconnected from ourselves. And I'm speaking for men as a majority. We're disconnected from ourselves. We have a hard time feeling outside of ourselves. We have a hard time being grounded and present in our lives, and we're chasing things. So I think if community is not created, if men are not stepping forward to take that responsibility, it's going to get even worse in our society.
Yeah, it seems that way. Kind of on that turn. So, as you were talking, I had a question arise around, you know, what's your take on when you mentioned the story about the elephants and how, you know, there was a kind of a regulation that happened just being in the presence of the older elephants or the mature elephants. And would you say in your experience that similar kind of co-regulation happens with humans on that level, where there's like a natural tempering that happens? And I want to couple this with another question. You know, if that's enough, or, you know, in many traditional cultures throughout the ages, initiation was a pretty intensive process, right? You almost needed to face death on some level in a lot of different cultures. And I'm just curious your perspective on this. Like, do you imagine that level of intensive initiation is still necessary in order to bring a boy into this kind of mature view of the world?
Yeah. I mean, we have initiation rites. They're just not great ones. We have gang initiation, telling gang members your life is not about you, it's about the whole. We have the military, where your life is not about you, it's about the whole. We just don't have it here. And the reason they used to mark or burn or cut the men in or young men in initiation was to remind them of this, that it is not all about you. It is not all about you. There's a bigger purpose. And I talk a lot about purpose when I work with men. There is a seed, I believe, in every man, and his work is to find what that seed is within him that he is here to put forth into his life or community. I don't think it's enough to have elders around. I think rituals are important. I think men's retreats are important. I think men's groups are absolutely important. Men need to be with men in many instances. And I hope we jump into the archetypes, because it is the suppression of these energies that are causing men to move into their shadows and act from that space. The divine king, is actually straddles both worlds. He's connected in the physical world, and he's also has another foot in the heavens, as it has been said. And all that means is that he has perception above and beyond this physical world.
Yeah. Let's get into that, because you actually started to touch on one of the questions that came through from one of the viewers, which was around the archetypes and the shadows that are associated with them. Yeah. So let's just get into a basic definition of, like, how would you define masculine archetypal energy, just for people that aren't familiar with that term?
Think about archetypal energies as energies that are instilled within you, whether you want to agree with them or not. They're just these running themes that run through the masculine that can either be observed, revealed, embodied, and allowed to have expression, or they get suppressed. So these are like foundational pieces of energies that run through the masculine. And this is masculine, feminine. We're not talking about gender. Mm-hmm. So it started off with Jung, who brought out the animal and the animus, and later was flushed out by Moore and Gillette with a book they wrote called King, Warrior, Magician, Lover. King, Warrior, Magician, Lover. And we see this thread, these story, you know, our stories, our myths have always had these swimming through them. And even within our secular life, these energies need to be acknowledged, expressed, and owned. So I'll be happy to run through those if you'd like, and give a little bit of detail around each of them and their shadows.
Yeah, that'd be great. I think the viewers would really be interested in that.
I'll start off with the king. The king itself is a reflection of the other archetypes in full bloom. It is understood that there are a couple of ways of being able to identify a man in his king energy. One, the land around him or his kingdom flourishes. There's life moving through. And two, he brings order out of chaos. That is another one of his gifts. In his shadows, he is either the tyrant, so he is the tyrant that says, it's either my way or you're fired, or a bully, or someone that terrorizes his way in getting what he wants. You see, the king does not serve himself, but he serves the Tao, or he serves the way, or something greater than himself. And he's connected to that. So he's living out his purpose. He's living out his what's in his heart, that he believes he has to do before he dies. And as a result, by being in tune to that, what happens is that he's actually receiving insights from something other than just self, in inspiring and holding and pushing him forward in his mission. The other polar opposite of the tyrant is the weakling. So you see some men that are, they don't have a voice in their own home. They can't speak their truth. They have been shut off at an early age and can't get over it. So you have tyrants on one hand and you have the weakling on the other hand. The other three archetypes actually give rise to the king. For example, the warrior. The warrior energy, if aligned with something greater than itself, is the part of man that gets what he needs to get done, done. He is the one that confronts, he is the one that goes, has the hard conversations, he's the one that does what's right, not what's easy. He is meticulous in his approach. He is sharp with his feedback. That is the archetype of the warrior. He protects the boundaries, he protects his family. When he doesn't have something greater than himself to place that energy on, what happens is he goes into the shadows of either the masochist or the sadist. And similar to the magician would be considered the right hand of the king, the advisor, the person who is educated, the person who knows the ins and outs, not of only the political landscape, let's say, but also of his inner world. He is in tune to his own energy and he can feel out into the energy of others. When in his shadow, when that is not being fully owned or expressed, then he'll go into his shadows, which are either the manipulator, the great manipulator, gets what he wants for himself, or the innocent one, tries to get what he wants for himself, but gets caught and says, you know, I had nothing to do with it. So the shadows, it's all about me. The full expression is for the Tao, is for the way, is for something greater, it's for her. And the lover, of course, is what brings humanity to all the other archetypes when in full expression. This is the artist, this is the part of man that knows he's interconnected to all things. And when not fully expressed, when somehow unowned, then he becomes the addict. Or he becomes impotent in his own life in some way. When these archetypes are owned and in full bloom, they give rise to the king. They give rise to a man who embodies all of these traits.
Wonderful. Yeah, I love those descriptions, and I want to follow up to those descriptions. Part of this viewer's question was how can we embody them? Right. And I think you touched on it a little bit, but yeah. I think this is being the embodiment conference. You know, I think it's a really important point to nail down.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll give you an example of like warrior energy and how do you embody warrior energy? Right. You know, in the groups that I hold and that I know you held as well, or you hold as well, we create a container. And we create practices and we invoke this energy out. In a safe, loving space, we give these expression. We allow these to have expression. So practices are certainly one way to amplify and go really loud on an energy. It's not what you would do in real life, right? I mean, it's not like you would, you know, I'd like unleash you and you know, somebody didn't give you your coffee fast enough, you wouldn't want to bring your warrior out and just let him have it, which is interesting because some men, as soon as they get in touch with that power that they've neglected to tap into in the beginning, have really loud voices for situations that are maybe not called for that. You know, let's say they haven't used their voice against their mother-in-law for, let's say, 10 years. Then they suddenly take a few practices with us and they see that part of themselves. They liven up, they light up, and now that door's been opened. Then the situation comes where, you know, the salt didn't get passed fast enough, and he's out. So we have to work with being able to also modulate that. Robert Bly talked about this really well in the book Iron John, where he talked about the three different knights with the different, I'm not sure if you remember that, but there was three different knights with three different colored suits. And they represented a man's ability to be with such energies. And so the first color is red, and the red represents the fire that runs in the adolescent, that runs through the elephants with must. It can be a potent, powerful energy. But in red, in the stage of red, men have not been able to master this energy. Through some time, the color white appears for the knight. The color white represents a really sincere, altruistic desire to do right. To do right. They want to do right. They want to do good. But the problem is that they are being run from shadows they're not conscious to. Shadows are running them. Things they're not aware of are actually pushing them to be a certain way. So let's say you have a father who is a drug addict, and then the son, growing up, all he wants to do is be sober and create sober communities. He is being earnest, but he's being run by something. That is the white. That is the white knight, the white shirt, however you want to look at it. And finally, there's with the color black. And the idea here is that black represents the shadow. And in this stage, a man is courageous enough not only to face his shadow, but he is also an alchemist in a way where he can eat and absorb this shadow as an artistically moves through the world, not run by his shadow, but completely able to not be affected by that any longer. So I think that speaks a little bit to also the trajectory of what men have to go through to be able to ultimately be free.
Yeah, it's almost like an integration. Like we don't ever get rid of these things. It's more like learning how to welcome them and work with them on some level, even yeah. The shadow aspects.
Yeah, and I think bringing them into consciousness is absolutely key. And then to feel safe enough in a container where you can allow such processes to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. So. Yeah, I think you touched on the embodiment piece, and I think what you're speaking to is, we need to practice embodying them in a way so that we learn how to then be able to work with them in real life situations, maybe in a modulated way, so it's not just this over exaggerated version.
Yeah. And, I would venture to say, some men do actually alchemize these shadows and are never really run by them, any longer. That's the ultimate goal, I think, for men's work is freedom. Not only just freedom from, what runs them, but freedom in the sense that, they realize that this world of ours, that anything that is projected out of ourselves cannot really soothe what is happening inside. And for me and the men that I work with, and you know, we move these blocks, you know, to get in touch with the divine, which I personally believe resides in the heart space. And once you realize that you're okay in this life, in spite of your circumstances, that you can breathe, live, be inspired by, receive direction from, and to live out your life from that space is really the crux of my work that I do with men.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, and I wanted to ask you like how you would define men's work, but you know, you kind of touched on the foundation of it there. Is there anything else you would want to add to that?
Community, you know, community. Mm-hmm. There's something beautiful about, you know, and I think in the West, we have a hard time being relaxed around other men, besides the fact that most men, you know, think everything's a competition, the guard is up. You know, in the Middle East, and I was born in Iran and I was there till I was 9 years old. And I still remember like being in the park and like men, you know, older men, you know, like men in their 60s holding hands and walking in the park. And there's nothing sexual about that. There's, you know, it's only here where it makes people uncomfortable. It's here, you know, and I feel like we're starting to approach this topic. But, you know, I've run men's groups and been around men in community for a long time. And it's really beautiful to be with another man that wants nothing from you, but, you know, your deepest good, whatever that may be. And these communities of men's work provide that.
Yeah, totally agree. And I will say that, you know, I've been doing this for so long as well, maybe not quite as long as you, but, you know, coming on 20 years now. And it's something that's just become part of the fabric of my life at this point, and I wouldn't be able to live without it, having other men that I trust and love to be supported by them.
Yeah, it's a nourishment that is really missing in our society. There's mm-hmm. deep nourishment that is missing in our society. Rumi is a great poet to explore in this realm. You know, he had this relationship that he talks about, you know, and it was with a man, and there was no sexual tones to it. It's just, you know, there's beauty to be had, to be held. You know, you fall into, you know, I take men into practice and I have to work, you know, the first 10 minutes to bring the guard down, to deepen the mm-hmm. breath. It's like our nervous system is so it's in such protection mode. It's the vigilance is super high. The vigilance is super yeah. high on everybody. And I really mm-hmm. Attest that to this disconnect that we have from the Great Mother, this inability to be with nature, this, you know, such nourishment is missing, you know, and you know this, I know you know this, I know you go into nature as I do, as the men I work with, it's a prerequisite, you know, the 4 month program I have, 1 hour a week in silence in nature is mandatory, you know, and it's hard sometimes for men. Oh, what do you mean? What do I do there?
Right.
You do nothing.
What do I get from that?
Yeah. Right.
But there is, I mean, in my experience, you get so much and it's not easy to put into words, but it's medicinal in my experience. It's
absolutely. Really medicinal. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So I want to just make sure I'm holding this container around the time and check in on these questions here that are coming in through the audience. I think we've touched on a lot of them. I'm just taking a quick look over here.
Sure.
So, well, you know, I think this will touch on one of the questions. is, you know, somebody mentioned something like what do men in their power as embodied healthy kings mean for the future of society? And it kind of touches on personal question, which is, you know, what's your vision of masculinity in the next 100 years? Like, how do those tie in together?
Okay. So when patriarchy came into view about 3600 BC, laws were introduced, and there was, before then, men were incredibly in tune to their environment and the elements in nature. Their matriarchy was in balance. It was an egalitarian system. Yes, there was always some form of war or battle, but men as a whole were in balance with the elements, in balance with nature, in balance with the wisdom that comes from nature. They were also in balance with the feminine. So the feminine and post-matriarchy, men started to want to control the feminine, to control nature as if it was this conquest. And they started to resort to dominance, and they started to want to dominate the feminine. And to this day, how many laws do we have about men and their bodies, and how many laws do we have of women and their bodies? Men are still trying to control the feminine. The feminine, the expression of the divine, manifested in women, our counterparts, needs to be revered and looked at with awe, not domination. So you ask me, what is the future of this planet and the kings that will come ahead of us? These are men that protect the feminine. They hold space and safety for the feminine to have pure expression. They hold the gaze of this amazing being that is able to produce life out of herself. As above, so below, this incredible being that is able to be a part of creation itself. And we look at her and we say, oh, and we stand in awe of the feminine, not fear of the feminine. We don't need to stranglehold the feminine. We don't need clitoris mutilations in parts of the world. We don't need burqas to suppress the feminine. We want to be in harmony with the feminine, and we want to be in harmony with the Great Mother. The future of this planet, if we are to survive, will be this harmonious relationship. If we can't find a way back to be in harmony, she will outlive us all, is my sincere belief.
Yeah, well said. And I think I just want to drop in here, because I think it's always an important distinction that you made at the beginning, is, you know, both men and women both have the masculine and feminine within them. And I'm just curious your take on this, because what I often see is, because of our conditioning as men, there's a lot of suppression of our own feminine in some way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you're suppressing the feminine within you, if you have judgments about the feminine within you, if you are unable to express beauty through music and movement and full expression, if you feel that is somehow to be mocked, guess what? The feminine outside of yourself will not trust you. Will not trust you. And if you desire a feminine woman in your life that is rich in those areas, that is fully expressed, then I would say you need to venture into the depths of your own feminine. We absolutely have the same, we're the same. We just rest at a different point than others do. And it is essential to, for any, this is my belief of any man doing men's work out there, it is essential that you also do feminine practices for your men. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So yeah, I think it's important to touch on this piece here, because it's, you know, it's a term that's kind of being thrown around in pop culture right now. And it's the term toxic masculinity. And I'm curious what your take on that is. Like, if you even believe that that's a thing, you know, how would you define it? Or what's your perspective on this idea of toxic masculinity?
I think it touches on what I've already shared. I think men that are living a life only for themselves, I'll get what I want, I'll do whatever I want to get what I want. That's all life is, are going to breed toxicity.
Yeah.
I think men who are in touch with the deeper parts of themselves and are connected to their highest self cannot do harm. They cannot do harm. That doesn't mean that they wouldn't protect their family if there was some problem. But because of the interconnectedness of all beings, and the balance and the harmonious balance between themselves and nature and themselves and the feminine, they are the divine kings. They are the future divine kings. And toxicity is nothing more than being cut off from all that beautiful, beautiful, beautiful light within.
Yeah, love that. So there's, I think there's a lot of curiosity from the audience around shadow work. And, you know, I think this is an area that obviously there's an appropriate place to practice that kind of work. And I'm just curious how you imagine a healthy way to get into shadow work. What would that look like? And, you know, would you say it's something you can do on your own, or yeah.
Yeah. My take is somatic work is really has for me personally moved and brought me to terms with myself more than any therapy or talking about something. I physically needed to move and face certain shadows within myself. I don't think it's something to be embarked on by yourself. I think being a part of a larger community, a safe community where you can explore these ideas and these concepts that may be lurking within in practices held in reverence and love can produce some beautiful results. Somatic therapists. And I think the game is really to come face to face, every one of us, with what drives us, and ultimately move all the things and the toys and the distractions out of the way, that we can connect to the deepest part of ourselves, that is connected to the divine.
Love that. Great. Well, we just have a couple minutes left, and I think a great place to wrap up would be circling back to the topic of purpose. You know, if you think you can summarize your perspective on like men finding their purpose in a way, you know, what that looks like, where a man might start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a minute, so I'll be very concise around this, but I really believe every man has a seed within him. And I think this seed starts to grow and make itself known, and you may start getting inclinations of what your heart wants to do. And what I would say in regards to purpose is that the insight comes from the heart and not necessarily from a chattering mind. So if you want clarity of purpose, men's work that involves moving some of these blocks is absolutely instrumental. And then stillness, absolute stillness with oneself. Hour of sitting and doing nothing as a practice in nature, ideally. And then it will make itself available to you. You know, I wasn't, you know, I had been doing men's work since I was 23. But, you know, for me, my full bloom of purpose didn't happen until about 2.5 years ago, where I had this clarity, of starting embodiedmasculine.com. And, you know, and I wouldn't beat yourself up if it's not clear. You know, listen to your heart, do what's next, be a part of a community that supports your vision of bringing that into fruition. That's what I would say about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So to me, it sounds like patience is a major ingredient in finding that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, great. Looks like we got to wrap up. Really great speaking with you, Amir. Thank you so much for bringing your wisdom. Matthew is going to carry us out, I believe.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You too, brother.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you so much. Thank you for supporting that call. I really appreciate you stepping in and being here, being present. That's Amir's session, and thank you so much, Amir, for being here for this. For me, in the conversations we had, there's a power and there's a presence you bring that's around, for me, the magician and the lover. So the sovereign, the shadow of the sovereign is a tyrant or abdication from life to video games or alcohol or drugs, whatever, but the sovereign in command extends out and sees beyond, understands the rules. The warrior holding strength and presence, and you just certainly are an exemplar of that. For me, the magician lover archetypes, that blessing that you bring to the father wound in men through your own healer's, hero's journey, is something that I picked up very quickly in our conversation and in looking around your work. And I'd recommend Amir's work to almost anybody, but particularly around that field. There's a real sense for me of this is where solutions and answers have a deep, really positive outcome. So thank you for being part of this today. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for speaking your truth and your connections.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
There should be a couple of websites in the chat box about the Facebook streaming, which will be live for the next 48 hours. And after that, it goes into the paywall to support this conference and enable us to do this again, possibly. We'll certainly cover the costs we've incurred. A coffee break now for a little bit longer than normal because we've got a scheduling blip. So the next one will be in 3 hours' time, and that's Uni Turrentini, Women on Fire, How Anger Can Be the Portal into Your True Feminine Power. So it's an interesting combination of talks through the day today. Thank you. I think that's the wrap for today. That's great. Thank you very much. Thank you, guys. Log in again soon. Enjoy the conference.